Welcome to the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Thanks for tuning in today. I've got a couple of guest experts today that I know you're going to enjoy. Joining me momentarily is Dr. Chris Martinson. Many of you may remember Dr. Martinson, who has appeared on the program in the past. He is the author of the book, The Crash Course, and his most recent book, released in November, is titled Prosper. We'll talk to him about what his take is moving ahead for the U.S. economy and your money. And we'll also be talking today once again with one of my favorite guests, Mr. Mike Mish Shedlock. Mish is a very prolific blogger. He is of the opinion that the world is now in recession. He'll explain why. He'll also explain again, in his view, what it means for you and your money. Couple resources that we have available before I get to my interview with Chris Martinson. First of all, we do have coming up our new retirement rules class on March the 12th. That's just a few weeks away. We will be holding that at the East Beltline campus of Western Michigan University. The cost for the class is just $49. That covers the cost of the class for you and a guest, all handouts, as well as lunch for you and a guest. You can get more information or register by visiting the website, newretirementrules.com. And also, in light of some recent Social Security collection rule changes, we are holding in the month of March three different Social Security maximization workshops. We'll be at the Highlands Golf Club on Leonard Street Northwest on March 1, out at Stonewater Country Club in Caledonia Township on March the 10th, and at Boulder Creek in Belmont on March the 29th. So March 1, March 10, and March 29. If you'd like to register or get more information about the workshops, you can visit the website socialsecuritydinner.com. Those workshops begin at 6, conclude at 7:30, and they include a complimentary dinner. Again, the website to get more information or register is socialsecuritydinner.com. I'm pleased to have as a returning guest on the Everything Financial Radio program, Dr. Chris Martinson. Chris is the author of the book, The Crash Course. If you haven't read it, you should. It's very relevant. His new book, co-authored with Adam Taggart, is titled Prosper. That was released in November, and his website is peakprosperity.com. And Chris, welcome back to the program.
Dennis, it's a real pleasure to be back with you today.
So, Chris, talk to the listeners and explain to the listeners what the premise of your book, Prosper, is.
Sure. The Crash Course, Dennis, is, as you know, is really a problem definition book. It talks about many of the predicaments we find ourselves in, and when people encounter those, the most common question that Adam and I found ourselves posed with was, so what should I do? Prosper is the answer to that big question, and what we've done in that book is we don't just give people one piece of things they should do, one set of things. We've broken down the kinds of things people could do into eight different big buckets, eight different forms of capital that if you could build all of those up and be rich in these eight forms of capital, you'll not only be happier, healthier, wealthier today, but you'll be more resilient and prepared for whatever future might or might not arrive. So it's really a strategy for how people can become more resilient and we think, happier and wealthier too.
Maybe in big picture terms, Chris, for our listeners that aren't familiar with your work, what is your overall forecast, economically speaking?
It centers around this one word, which is unsustainable. We have an economic model that's built on unlimited growth, and it's turning out you can't have unlimited growth. So what we've been seeing is the early stages of this process where our economy and money system that got very used to and tuned and geared for unending growth is having a harder and harder time growing economically because we have over $200 trillion in debt worldwide, very hard to grow when you have that much debt. But for other reasons, which we're seeing in the energy space where oil either is too expensive for the economy to really afford or too cheap for the energy companies to really go after, and that floor and ceiling is getting closer. So what we see in that word unsustainable is that lots of things are going to change. People need to adjust their thinking accordingly, and we're going to have to understand there's new rules in play for what wealth is, how you accumulate it, and most importantly, how you keep it.
So, Chris, I read with great interest your blog entry from January 15, so about a month ago as this airs, titled "The Deflation Monster Has Arrived." For our listeners that, again, may not be familiar with what deflation is, define it, and then let's talk about some of what you wrote about in the blog.
I would love to. So, first, the definition. When I'm talking inflation or deflation, Dennis, I'm talking about money and credit. If we have more money and credit expanding rapidly, we sometimes would call that inflation. The opposite of that is when money and credit aren't expanding fast enough to keep all the previous credit and debt in the system happy, we call that deflation. Eventually, we detect that as falling prices, but the thing we have to worry about is that we have a financial system that's either expanding or it's very unhappy, even collapsing. So deflation, the deflation monster in this, what I'm writing about, is noting that we're in a global economy now. When we look across the global economy, we are seeing clear signs that the financial system is in distress because it can no longer create enough debts to service the old debts. And if that monster takes root and really begins to rampage across the landscape, the risks are extremely large that we're going to see another financial crisis and maybe lots of what people will experience is losses of wealth in their portfolios, equities, bonds, things like that.
So, Chris, when you take a look at what's happened with commodities over the past few years, everything from really agricultural commodities to metals, oil you mentioned, everything is down significantly. Is that the beginning or the first symptom of this deflation monster that you're writing about?
That's one area where the deflation monster has arrived in force, and the commodity space, the mining sector, is just a shambles at this point in time, particularly when you're looking at coal, ore, iron ore, aluminum, things like that. So the basic building blocks of a rapidly growing economy, and there we have a story, which is pretty easy to understand. The world created lots and lots and lots of money out of thin air in order to fight the 2008 crisis and recession. China was the recipient of a lot of that money because they made the stuff the world wanted to buy with all that fresh money. So China went on an absolutely extraordinary building spree, and half of China's economy was just devoted to building large buildings. And that takes copper, steel, iron, things like that. And so that story came to an end because you can't grow like that forever, and also the debt machine really began to shudder to a halt. So if you want to understand what deflation looks like and feels like, you could do worse than to peer into the mining sector and see what's happening there. And it's quite an extraordinary downturn and deflationary cycle that we're seeing in that whole set of industries.
So, Chris, when you talk about the money printing that's occurred, when one studies history, it's very apparent that not only can debt not be continually created forever, it's got to be sustainable. Money printing long-term is not sustainable either. The outcome is fairly predictable. So that being the case, why do policymakers make the choice to print to start with?
Because they're afraid. Dennis, they're afraid of what's going to happen if this deflation monster really takes off. There'll be a lot of careers ruined. The institutions will fail. There could even be sovereign defaults. There's a whole host of reasons that they fear this deflation monster getting started. But, of course, we would have to rewind, Dennis, and understand the roots of this began way back in the 80s when we left our senses and decided it was okay to grow our debts at twice the rate that our economy was growing. And we did that for decade after decade. And anytime we had a hiccup, the response to that was not to look back and say, hey, guess it was a bad idea to grow our debts at twice the rate of income or GDP. What we're going to do instead is we're going to just keep lowering interest rates so that we can just keep that credit machine going forever. All anybody has to do who's listening to this to understand really whether this is a sustainable thing that will happen in the long term or not is, can we continually lower interest rates to spur more credit creation forever? Now, listen, we're already at the zero bound. In fact, we're at the negative interest rate, the NERP side of this. So we're already down to the point where money is essentially free to borrow, and it's still not sufficient to get things moving again. That should be concerning to anybody listening.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for this segment. Our guest on today's program, Dr. Chris Martinson, his most recent book, Prosper, is must reading. He also has a website. You can go check out some of his other writings. It is peakprosperity.com. I'd encourage you to do that. I'll continue my conversation with Chris when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. If you would like to listen to the Everything Financial Radio program anytime you'd like, you can go to the iTunes store and become a subscriber to the Everything Financial Radio podcast. The program that you hear each week is posted on Tuesdays, and you can listen to it anytime you'd like. Again, just visit the iTunes store and search under Everything Financial Radio. I'm chatting today with Chris Martinson. Chris is the author of the book Prosper. I should say co-author of the book Prosper. His website is peakprosperity.com. And in the last segment, Chris, we were talking about that the debt levels really have grown to unsustainable levels. You pointed out that since interest rates have been really at 0% since the financial crisis, and nothing seems to be changing, at least in a positive manner, that should make people concerned. So let me ask in this segment a few questions relating to how our listeners might be affected as a result of these debt excesses. What's the number one thing that should be on our listeners' radar screen to not only be aware of, but also to potentially protect themselves from?
Well, the first thing is that if we go into another downturn, of course, we will get back into an era of job losses again, unfortunately. A lot of the so-called gains that we saw from this money printing were really illusory. I mean, you know, the fact that we have stocks hitting all-time highs was, you scratch under that, Dennis, and you discover that happened because companies were buying back their own shares with money they borrowed. And that makes sense from a financial perspective for a company, but it didn't give us property, plant, equipment, and investments in jobs and personnel. So I'm very worried that when this next downturn comes, we'll see another wave of downsizing. People should be ready for that. People should be examining, you know, their own security and their jobs. In this new book, Prosper, we highly recommend people have multiple alternate sources of income available to them. Another thing we would recommend is that people should really safeguard their portfolios against these downturns. Many things can be done. You know, going to cash sometimes makes a lot of sense, but you can also protect positions you don't want to otherwise get out of with puts, calls, and various strategies. So we're very much in a return of rather than a return on capital stance at this point in time. And thirdly, people need to be aware, really, of the larger context of why this is actually happening. This is not some mysterious economic fairy wave bad dust on us and we get a recession. This is happening because we've made a bunch of mistakes economically, financially, monetarily, and it's pretty easy to understand what those are if you do a little studying of that. And the conclusion that we come to in Prosper is that, yes, take care of your money, that's important, but there are other things you can do to really make sure that you're well-positioned to ride out whatever storm might be coming and maybe even be in a position to help your friends and neighbors.
So, Chris, let's expand on that thought of safeguarding portfolios, just to drill down on that. You obviously, with that statement, are bearish on traditional asset classes like stocks and bonds?
I am at this point in time. The model that we're working with at Peak Prosperity is the idea that we're going to have first the fall. First, there's going to be a deflationary impulse. It's going to be scary. We're going to see markets go down a lot more. I mean, even we see the concern with the Dow down, 7 or 8% or something. We're expecting a much steeper fall than that. And then we get to part two of this story, Dennis, where the next thing we're expecting is for the central banks to do one more set of actions. But this time we're keeping our eyes open for the idea that the central banks are going to do something different, maybe money for Main Street instead of the big banks. Somehow you and I and people listening will get money. We would recognize this as a tax holiday, maybe a tax rebate for prior years, the resulting deficits being monetized by the Fed. Maybe it's a check from the Fed. I don't know. But we're expecting that the central banks are going to fight hard this next downturn. But first the fall, then the turn. And when we get to that turn, that's where we would want people to have dry powder, to have cash on the sidelines that's liquid so that you would be ready to move in and make the most of what we think are going to be some final sort of bargains at that rate, because we will be entering the inflationary part of the story after we experience enough of the deflation for it to scare people.
So, Chris, when you say inflation following deflation, when you look at a lot of analysts that are taking a look at where we are, they're expecting more central bank action to the point that we get inflation, and the deflation will follow the inflation. What would you say to someone who has that position?
Well, I have it completely backwards, just because, you know, we're seeing that the deflation monster is really, it's already here, lots of evidence. You know, we're seeing it all across the landscape, and, you know, you can see it right now today. If you're looking at this in early February, what you're going to see is look at what's happened to the financial stocks. I'm including money center banks, brokerages, maybe financial companies, as well as insurance companies. They've just been getting hammered since about mid-December. I think there's something really kind of ugly under the covers there. Don't quite understand all of it yet, still searching, but it's broad-based. It's in Japan, it's in Europe, it's in the United States, it's in China. So it's pretty broad-based. That, to me, usually means that there's a deflationary pulse coming, and it really is going to take something very different than the Fed has done so far to create inflation, because guess what? Handing big piles of money to very big banks who then just stuff it in reserve accounts at the Fed is not inflationary. The only inflation we've seen is in the goods and services that the upper 0.1% have required. Very hard to get a Gulfstream 650 for a good price. Trophy properties, very expensive. Big carat diamonds, very expensive. But we're expecting that inflation to extend into the rest of the population when the Fed opens its checkbook up and makes that money come to us.
Chris, how long can the Fed keep opening the proverbial checkbook? At a certain point, doesn't it threaten the integrity of the U.S. dollar?
Well, it does. And, of course, we've been seeing some very careful maneuvering by a number of countries to get away from that. Big, big deal signed very recently between China and Russia to begin selling Russian oil to China directly for yuan, the Chinese currency, bypassing the dollar entirely. Big news, kind of skipped it in a lot of the Western sources, but that's huge. And so we're seeing countries beginning to diversify away, holding fewer and fewer dollars. And this is going to be a long process to really put some fear under the dollar. But you're right. The more the Fed prints, and there will come a point when people externally will say, don't want the dollar as much anymore. That process is already underway. It could accelerate at some point, but it's already happening.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Dr. Chris Martinson, author of The Crash Course, co-author of the book Prosper. And you can read more of his work at peakprosperity.com. Chris, always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Dennis.
Let me again remind you of some free resources we have available here in the Grand Rapids area. In light of the recent changes that were made affecting how you can collect Social Security, we are conducting some free Social Security maximization workshops. These workshops, as I said, are free and also include a complimentary dinner. If you'd like to attend one, we have three coming up during the month of March. March the 1st will be at the Highlands Golf Club. That's on Leonard Northwest in Grand Rapids. On March the 10th, we'll be out at Stonewater Country Club. That's in Caledonia Township. And on March 29th, we'll be at Boulder Creek Golf Club. If you'd like more information or you'd like to register, just visit the website, socialsecuritydinner.com. The website, again, socialsecuritydinner.com. And we also have our new retirement rules class that is coming up on March the 12th. That will be held at the East Beltline campus of Western Michigan University. When you attend the class, the cost is just $49 for you and a guest. That's all handouts, the book, as well as lunch for you and your guest. We believe, in light of the fact that today's economy is different than at any time in the last 80 years, retirement planning rules have changed. We talk about what you might consider adding to your portfolio, what strategies and tactics you might consider employing at the new retirement rules class. And when you leave, you have a complete guide that we believe will be an important resource to help you navigate what might lie ahead. To get more information or register, just visit the website, newretirementrules.com. Everything Financial Radio will return after these words. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. Thanks for tuning in today, and thanks again to Dr. Chris Martinson for joining us on today's program. Quick reminder, the Everything Financial Radio program airs online anytime you'd like to listen at everythingfinancialradio.com. Joining me once again on today's Everything Financial Radio program, Mr. Mike Shedlock. You can read Mish's blog at mishtalk.com. That's M-I-S-H-T-A-L-K.com. Mishtalk.com, M-I-S-H-T-A-L-K.com. Mish, welcome back to the program.
Oh, pleasure to be back on. That is a new address for me. So I've moved my old blog over intact from Blogger to WordPress. Blogger simply could no longer meet my needs. It was a great relationship, though, with Google. For over 10 years, I've moved. So now you got to look for mishtalk.com.
Well, I would encourage the listeners to do that. I don't know of anybody who is a more prolific economic commentator than Mish. So, Mish, speaking of economic commentary, there was a factory orders report out as we're recording this just today. Fill the listeners in.
About 2 hours ago, factory orders came out, and my first comment, and this is the way my post reads on my blog, recession has arrived. Factory orders declined about 2.9%. November was revised downward. Durable goods were down 5%. Core capital goods, which excludes aircraft, which is really volatile, fell 4.3%. Inventories actually managed to rise. Inventory to sales ratio rose again, and that is going to cut into future hiring and production. So I added all of that up, and certainly we've seen just weakness after weakness. This is the 11th straight decline in core capital spending. We don't really see those kinds of numbers outside of recessions. The chart doesn't look deeply as recessionary as before, but this is the way recessions build. And yesterday, the non-manufacturing ISM report came out. It was positive, but 8 of 18 industries were now in contraction. Some of them aren't going to be surprising. Obviously, mining is in contraction, and wholesale trade, because of the strong dollar, has been in recession. But some new ones on the list: arts, entertainment, recreation, professional scientific and technical services, and the big one, accommodation and food services. There's been a lot of hiring at places like Chipotle, Wendy's, McDonald's. All these places have been expanding. It looks like we've seen, the end of that kind of expansion here. With 8 out of 18 industries of services in contraction now, I don't know how anyone can expect services to hold this economy together.
Mish, you went through a lot of facts there, a lot of figures, and some of it, because of the speed at which we went through it, might be of a bit of a blur to our listeners. But what does a recession mean to the average everyday American that's going to work every day, trying to put money away in their 401k and get ahead?
That's an interesting question. I did a blog on that yesterday. Last night was my first one out this morning before I saw the factory report. And I'm actually contemplating here something completely different than what happened in 2007 to early 2009. I'm wondering if we don't lose that many jobs. Instead, we've got so many people now working, multiple part-time jobs. Perhaps this go around, they lose one of those but keep the other one. That would make them ineligible for unemployment insurance, right? Because they still have a job. And we have people working two part-time jobs, say 20 hours a week. Well, maybe they get cut back down to 12 or to 15. So now they're working two part-time jobs, the total 30 hours. So I'm expecting people are going to be working less hours. It's conceivable that we don't see this big mass layoff
that we saw in 2007. Recall that we had monstrous home building, everything that was unsustainable going on back, heading up into the recession, the Great Recession, heading into 2007. Just all those construction layers had to be laid off. Everyone tied to the mortgage industry was laid off. We're not going to see that this time. It's going to look completely different. But if companies can't get rid of workers, you know, or instead they cut back, they still have to pay those benefits for those workers that they have on. The cost of Obamacare is going up, so consumers are going to cut back on their spending. But if businesses can't lay off workers, we're going to see a crash in corporate earnings. Of course, that's going to affect the stock market. That's my call.
So, Mish, often economic numbers are revised three times or so. Mm-hmm. Assuming we're in recession, when will it be official?
We might not see this for 12 months, 3 months, 6 months. The NBER is the official arbiter of recessions, and we've actually had a case where the recession was over before they admitted we were in one. Now, interestingly enough, just a few days ago, there was a report that I commented on where only 20% of economists thought that there was they thought that there was a 20%, economists thought in aggregate there was a 20% chance of recession this year. And I looked at that thing and I said, my gosh, the odds are at least that we're in recession right now or will be within a month or two. They're at least 20%. And today when I saw the factory report, I said, you know, that's it. I'm going to go out on a limb and say recession here has arrived. But yeah, there was an interesting case back in October. The BEA, the Bureau of Economic Analysis, government body, backward revised construction spending all the way for 10 years. It's going to affect GDP looking back for 10 years. But the two biggest years were 2014 and 2015. What happened is they actually underestimated GDP and construction spending in 2014. Well, that is going to have an effect because 2015 now compared to 2014 is slowing. And the BEA is not even going to revise those numbers for 2015. For second, and third quarters of 2015 are going to be the key ones. We're not going to find out about those revisions until I think it's July 26th, where all of a sudden they're going to come out and say, you know, well, guess what? We didn't grow as much in 2015 as we earlier stated. This is how far back these things go. And then, of course, the NBER, you know, might not be able to make a determination until the BEA has first made a determination that we didn't grow as much as we said we did.
Well, Mish, it's amazing how fast time goes when we have a conversation. We're going to have to leave it there for this segment, but Everything Financial Radio will return with Mr. Mish Shedlock after these words. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm Dennis Tubergen, your host. I want to remind you of a couple resources we have available if you just happen to be joining us today. We have our new retirement rules class that will be held at the East Beltline campus of Western Michigan University on Saturday, March the 12th. The class begins at 9 o'clock in the morning and concludes at 2:30 in the afternoon. March 12th is a Saturday. To get more information or to register, simply visit the website newretirementrules.com. And we also have coming up our Social Security maximization workshops that we are holding in light of the fact that Social Security has changed the way that you collect benefits in many situations. So we talk about the changes and how you might be affected at these maximization workshops. They begin at 6 p.m. and conclude at 7:30 p.m. with a complimentary dinner. will be at the Highlands Golf Club on March 1, Stonewater Country Club on March 10, and Boulder Creek Golf Club on March 29. To get more information or register, you just have to visit the website, socialsecuritydinner.com. I have the pleasure of chatting again today with Mr. Mish Shedlock. By the way, if you're just joining us, Mish has a new website where you can read his blog. He updates it several times a day. The website is mishtalk.com. That's M-I-S-H-T-A-L-K, mishtalk.com. I'd encourage you to check it out. And, Mish, when you take a look at what's going on, we just got on talking about the likelihood of the U.S. being in a recession. When you look at China and Europe and the rest of the world, it seems like this is worldwide, and certainly the banking system seems to be under some stress in Europe.
Banking system under stress, I believe, everywhere, and I think it's going to filter over to the U.S. We had this theory that remember back in 2007, somehow that China was going to decouple from the global economy. Well, it didn't. The theory of today seems to be that the U.S. is going to decouple from the rest of the world. Well, you know, I've been saying for a year, actually longer, that that's not going to happen either, and we're starting to see signs of that. And in the first segment, I talked about factory orders. I talked about the services ISM. 8 of 18 industries now in the U.S., including food services, in contraction. So all of this talk that the U.S. was going to escape, you know, the global economy was nuts. But in Europe, the banking sector is getting hit really, really hard. Let's talk about Italy. Something like 18% of their loans are impaired. The Italian banking system, when you look at that number, is insolvent. And on top of those 18% that they had met, there's another 18%. We're talking about, you know, 200 billion, you know, euros worth of loans that are impaired, and another 200 billion that are questionable. So we're talking about 35% of the loans of Italian banks are either outright bad or on the verge of becoming so. You know, and they claim that the system is solvent and they've stress test this. Well, it's a lie. Well, bank shares in Italy, even Deutsche Bank, Germany, all the bank shares in Europe are getting clobbered. So something clearly is going on there, and it's the market is finally said, you know, we don't believe that these banks, or the market is saying, we believe these banks are capital impaired, and indeed, I believe they are. Meanwhile, you know, Mario Draghi's, you know, doing everything he can to try and get banks to lend. They've got negative interest rates in the ECB. I think that's crazy. The Fed is discussing negative interest rates here now. We've got negative interest rates in Japan, negative interest rates in Denmark, negative interest rates in Sweden. And the Fed's talking about it here. Where does this go? And the fear here actually ought to be, and I mentioned this just yesterday, that we're going to get into a currency crisis, and if China enters this picture and starts devaluing more, that's exactly where we're headed.
So, Mish, with all these, with all the stress in the banking system, and you mentioned Italy, we've seen bail-ins and bank issues in Cyprus, Greece, Ukraine of late. Is Italy and some of these other European countries next?
Oh, Italy has already had two bail-ins. They had one in they had them in December, and they went after bondholders. Now, I think they ought to go after bondholders. The bondholders are certainly not sacrosanct. And so, you know, that part is good. Now, really all that they've done is they've pawned all of this garbage off onto the retail investor. That's the reason why we're now seeing these bail-ins, but we didn't see that back in 2007. It's who's holding the bonds now. Individuals in Italy have had their savings totally and completely wiped out. You know, these bank officials said, "Oh, trust us, nothing can ever the Italian banking system would have to collapse before we default on these." Well, they were totally wiped out. So, and we're seeing talks of that in Spain. I've been telling people, get your money. I said, get your money out of Greece. They still have capital controls. I'm now saying, get your money out of Italian banks. Get it out. Problem is, get it out to where? I don't believe that any banks in Europe are particularly safe, and certainly we're seeing even the share prices of Deutsche Bank in Germany just collapse in the last 6 months. So there's some serious issues there. There's serious issues in China. China shocked the world with a devaluation a few months back, and the market keeps pressuring the yuan. And China has gone through almost $1 trillion of its U.S. reserves trying to prop up the yuan. Well, I don't believe these things ever work. So there's pressure there. China stepped in, tried to defend the stock market. It collapsed anyway. So all these central bankers have this idea that they can just go in and do these things, and it's like mind over the economy. But, you know, clearly they're not in control of this. And, here the back in the U.S., the Fed still thinks that they're going to hike four times this year. Amazing. The Fed fund futures have taken away every hike this year. And, of course, that's what I proclaimed. I did not believe the Fed would get in any more than one rate hike. And that's the way it's looking right now.
Mitch, we're talking about bank bail-ins, and there might be some of our listeners not familiar with how a bank bail-in actually works. Could you explain?
Well, a bank is capital impaired. It has bad loans on its books. So they come in and they say, well, we're going to clean up this mess, but anyone with in Europe, the way it works, anyone with deposits over 100,000 euros is just going to have their money confiscated to bail out the banks for the bad loans they made. Any bondholders, anyone that bought bonds of these banks, and people bought these bonds because they were attractive. Maybe they were yielding 6%, but anyone who bought these bonds would be wiped out. But the rules in Europe right now are such that they can actually go after deposits. Of course, they did this in Cyprus, and had Greece left the Eurozone, it would have happened there as well, and it still might. There's renewed strife in Greece, lots more violence. People were upset. They expected the government of Cyprus to come in and do what they said. Instead, he bowed down, to the wishes of the Troika. And so, we'll see. The Greece issue is certainly not settled. And the second largest party in Italy actually wants to leave the Eurozone here now. And the secessionists in Spain, they don't want to leave the Eurozone, but another political party there that came in third in the last election, and I believe if they have a new runoff election there, this party called Podemos, stands for We Can, they want to get out of the Eurozone. So I think we're seeing that reflection of all this social sentiment of souring on the Eurozone. And we've also got the migration crisis there that is, you know, people are fed up. There's millions of people that have flooded these countries. There's not enough jobs to go around as it is. And the ECB came out, Eurozone officials came out and they said, maybe we should hire these people and pay them less. Well, great. That's going to take a job away from someone who's already living there, because then they're actually giving priority to jobs to millions of migrants. So people are upset, and they're upset everywhere. And speaking of upset, we're seeing the same thing here in the United States. That's what the Canada sees of the rise of Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump here in the United States. People are angry, and they're voting for non-establishment parties in the U.S., in Europe.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Mr. Mish Shedlock. Mish's blog can be read at his new website, mishtalk.com. That's M-I-S-H talk, T-A-L-K, mishtalk.com. And, Mish, I look forward to talking with you again a few weeks down the road.
Oh, my pleasure, and as always, good luck to you and the listening audience here in the new year. Be prepared for recession, because I think we're in one.
Well, that's our program for this week. On next week's program, joining me will be Mr. Roger Davis. He's the author of the book, Wall Street's Just Not That Into You, and we'll be talking to him about his recommendations moving ahead for portfolios, given that he shares my opinion that traditional asset classes likely will not perform well over the next 6 to 10 years. Also joining me on next week's program will be Mr. John Rubino, who is the co-author of The Money Bubble. His co-author on the book is Mr. James Turk, who is founder of the company Gold Money. Mr. Turk has been a guest here on the program several times. This will be Mr. Rubino's first appearance here on the program. We'll be talking to him about moving ahead. Should you be doing what the wealthy are doing in their portfolios? And he'll tell us what that will be as well. So we will be back next week, same time. Quick reminder, our new retirement rules class is coming up on Saturday, March 12. It will begin at 9 a.m. and conclude at 2:30 p.m. To get more information or to register while capacity remains, all you have to do is visit the website, newretirementrules.com. The website, again, newretirementrules.com. And to get more information on our Social Security Maximization Workshops, just visit socialsecuritydinner.com. That website, again, socialsecuritydinner.com. That's our program. Hope you got something you can use.